good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. It's breakfast somewhere, so eat up. Welcome to Breakfast with Vinny, food for thought. My guest today is joining us from the UK. She's a medical doctor and a research consultant. She has been a leading proponent in advocating for medical sovereignty and freedom, as well as tirelessly speaking out against the oppression of actual treatments that work with a vast amount of data. She's engaged in rigorous research to improve the quality of healthcare. Her peer-reviewed publications have received in excess of 4,000, 7,000 citations, and her research case score is among the top 5% of ResearchGate members. She's helping to steer the World Council for Health and the Great Free Set Coordinator. Please welcome Dr. Tess Lowry. Hi, Tess.
Hi, Vinny.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So this is a huge thing. And just to sort of give an overview, a large encapsulation of what we're talking about here, is basically about probably the most imminent issue of our time, I would say. And that's a big thing to say, because there are a lot of pressing issues like war and, you know, the sort of threat of AI that some people don't see as a threat at all. But this one is a big one, which is, you know, I'm going to turn it over to you to explain it. But basically, the World Health Organization is proposing a treaty, if I'm actually explaining this correctly, and a set of international health amendments that, according to many people, present company included, that would probably back this up, could be a threat to individual and national sovereignty. And if I got any of that wrong, please correct me, but I would love for you to sort of explain this to our audience, and maybe we could start there and talk about this.
Well, Vinny, it's really important to recognize that everything is connected. Everything that's happening right now is connected, from the COVID thing, which is now, you know, apparently over, to the WHO treaty, to the climate agenda, to the transhumanism agenda and the 5G and everything. It's all connected. So what is the thing that connects all of this? This is what we need to ask ourselves. And I'll just sort of lay it out. Basically, we've just come out. COVID was a man-made crisis. It was done with man-made pathogens. The solution was only one solution. It was a dangerous genetic, what they call the vaccine, but it's a gene therapy in the guise of a vaccine that wasn't properly tested. At the same time of that, there was all this technology rolled out, the surveillance technology in supermarkets, the cell phone masks, the satellites, everything happening at the same time while everybody was locked in their homes. And for some reason, political representatives around the world haven't been listening. They haven't been listening to the concerns about, the way COVID was managed. They haven't been listening to concerns about the COVID genetic therapies, which are now, you know, there's evidence now more and more of people harmed and dying and suffering and with chronic illnesses, all sorts of cancer. So they haven't been listening. Why? Well, it's because we're in the process of a global coup. There's a globalist minority group that is in its final sort of end game of pulling the wool over everybody's eyes, pulling the rug out and saying, ta-da, here is the new world government, the new world order, where we control everything, you control nothing, you have nothing, and we try and keep you happy, but basically you're useless, hackable animals. So, there is an anti-human agenda, and this is clear. And once you get that, you're on your way to a better world and a better way, because you have to kind of reach that point of cognition, and then you know what to do.
Well, that I think is has been a big part of the problem, because of media pushback and you know, as well as people who just think so differently, probably because they have a fundamentally different worldview, it's we've been so divided that those that don't believe it, their disbelief might be based in, you know, this sort of propagandistic thing that they've just believed. Who knows? I know that and I think you've touched upon this as well, that Matthias Desmet talked about this and called it mass formation psychosis. And, you know, when I saw the first time that he had actually proposed this, you can imagine the knives came out, you know, immediately. But the thing is, you know, it made a lot of sense. And you know, the whole thing of the knives coming out is very predictable, but you said it absolutely perfectly. If we could recognize that, and it's really not hard to do, because I think we're beyond the point of connecting the dots. Those that want to actually, you know, instill this and instantiate this global governance or new world order, they're not hiding it anymore. It's in plain sight.
Yes. So they tell us quite plainly, as you say. So one needs to think, well, who is this? Who are these globalists? Well, they're the corporations. So they're the billionaires and other vested interests above that, the banks that are basically controlling. They realize they pretty much own everything. They pretty much control all the money. So then we're rather stupid for having allowed that. And now they can, and now they've decided that actually they would like to own us too. They would like to own our data, because data is the new oil. It's the new oil and war. Data is gold. And right. So through that, they are able to, they are wanting to own us, and they want to know everything about us, mm-hmm. And control even the way that we think. So when you were saying, you know, we've been divided and why it's difficult to communicate with people, and there's those who just can't believe any of this, it's not their fault, in the sense that we are constantly being bombarded and influenced by this globalist agenda through the television, through Netflix, through our mobile phones, through the radio frequency waves. And we are, you know, we are constantly, our opinions are constantly being formed. So we may think that they are our opinions, but they are mostly opinions that have been, if you watch television, if you read the newspapers, if you're on that mass media in any form on social media, which is crafted to, you know, I think people know that things pop up. The things that they're interested in pop up on their phones, and they marvel at how this could be. Well, it's because our data and everything is constantly being monitored and we're being marketed to and controlled in that way. So, you know, so our emotions as well. So people are in a fear state, and this is part of how totalitarianism works. You get people to be fearful, and then you can make them do anything. It's this global public-private partnership. This is what's corrupted everything, and it's been a slow corruption over the years, but it actually has led to the infiltration by all of our institutions, our governments, organizations around the world, infiltration by this ideology of the globalists. So policy enforcers, that's where our national governments sit in the hierarchy. So they are merely the policy enforcers. They're not making policies. You may think they're making the policies. You may think you voted for them. But they are basically puppets and policy enforcers for the policy distributors. So the policy distributors, they're the World Health Organization, the United Nations, the World Bank. They influence all the different countries, but not even they. They're not making the policies. The policies are coming from these, what they call so-called think tanks, the World Economic Forum, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Council of Foreign Relations, Chatham House, the Club of Rome. These are globalist think tanks. These are what they call themselves the elite, and I'm not sure how they could ever think that they are. These are the individuals who have decided that they know what's best for humanity, and the objective is money and exploitation and basically slavery for all, because we're right at the bottom of the heap. We pay for the whole system through our taxes and their wars and everything, and we are at the receiving end. But right at the top, It's the Bank of International Settlements. It controls mm-hmm. everything. So it's a money system. It's a exactly. money control system. So the sooner we realize our governments are not in control and the whole election thing, it's just a real, it's just a fake theater.
It's theater, yeah.
It's theater. So
it's becoming more and more obvious that it's theater, yeah.
I think it is. I think it is kind of more and more obvious. And we need to step away from it and not be divided and realize it's actually us, the people, who right. need to get together. It doesn't matter if we have different perspectives and maybe someone believes that there's stratospheric aerosol injections and somebody mm-hmm. doesn't. They think it's just, you know, the normal vapor trails of a plane. It doesn't matter. We don't need to let those things divide us. We're all on a yeah. different level of this awakening or, mm-hmm. you know, awakening to all the many deceptions that we have, you know, all the wool that's been pulled over our eyes. It's sort of a peeling back of the onion, really.
Peeling back the whole onion is really revealing, because even those who would, you know, immediately cry tinfoil hat, you know, and all that sort of thing, you could just reframe it and just think about this for a second, whereby, for example, there are a lot of people who are completely unaware of this, the depth of what you just illustrated here, who are saying, wait a minute, who's really running the show? We're in a technocracy, or we're in some sort of autocracy, or some kind of corporatocracy. And really, it's a different kind of awakening with the realization that something is off. And you know, myself included, started seeing this, thinking, wait a second, who's calling the shots? And these are people that actually are having permission to do this that I didn't vote for. None of us voted for these people. So who's giving them all this power? Yes.
Well, this is the problem with money, because if I decide to do something, just say mm-hmm. in my garden, you know, just say I decide to put up an umbrella and it cast shade onto the neighbors, he can come over and say, listen, you know, you really need to take that down because it's affecting my life and my garden. I now have too much shade. But if a billionaire decides he thinks it's a good idea to send 20,000 satellites up into the stratosphere and see how it works, it's very difficult for us as human beings, who are all affected now then by that radiation, by the surveillance technology, and the potential for it to be used in warfare and weapons and so on. You know, it makes it much more difficult to stop these sorts of things. But we do need to stop these sorts of things, and we do need to, because it's not only an anti-human agenda, it's an anti-planetary agenda. This agenda is about creating inorganic life, turning the world into cyborgs and being able to control it, kind of being able to bottle human beings.
Yeah, well, they reveal that. World Economic Forum talks about it openly. Transhumanism is, you know, that's it. It's the singularity and all this sort of stuff. And, of course, there's going to be a lot of clever ways to sell it. You know, look, the blind can see, you know, superhumans and it's already starting with augmented reality. And, you know, it's easy to tout the benefits of this sort of stuff. And it will be also equally easy to sell it, especially to youth when things are presented to them that enable them to go, wow, how cool. You know, this is really cool. I can't live without this. My friend has it. And so I have to live in this world. So that's part of it. Whereas, you know, people like myself who are a little older have that meter to go, wait a minute, no.
Yeah, Vinny, that's why we really need people like yourself and our age group. It is a sort of middle-aged revolution, you could say. Yeah. It used to be young people who were the rebels, but it's not that way at the moment. What we're fighting for really is the future of humanity. The way this one world, a new world order, is being brought about, you mentioned the World Health Organization earlier, the way it's being brought about is through the World Health Organization and United Nations structures. So this is the way they want to manifest. And now the banks are all in Switzerland, Geneva, as you know, and a lot of the World Economic Forum is there as well. So this is really the place where I think this new world government is scheduled to manifest itself. The document you mentioned, the World Health Organization Pandemic Treaty, is just one of two documents that they are using to hand over in what is pretending to be a negotiation, but it's not, where they expand the power of the World Health Organization so that it has the power, the deputy, the director general of the World Health Organization would have the power to declare another public health emergency. So not just a pandemic, but a public health emergency of international concern, which until recently included any potential public health emergency of international concern. So there has been tremendous pushback internationally. And I think this is what people need to know. There's been international pushback from a grassroots level with people saying, absolutely no way. I'll just show you this document here. This is an article by article compilation of the proposed amendments to the international health regulations. So this is the document that was that we have been working with over the last 2 years, which has tremendous changes. And yeah. One thing that's really dramatic in the document is the word shall. Now, shall is an instruction. It's a mandate. In legal terms, if they use the word shall, it means you've got to do it, you know?
It's an imperative.
Yeah, it's imperative. Yeah. So this document has more than 168 instances of shall. Instead of you may do this, or instead of may, it's shall, or and this is a legally binding document already. It's the existing international health regulations from 2005, and they've just made enormous changes and said, don't worry too much about it. You don't need to put it to referendum or tell the people in your country. And they just have a representative of the country in the meeting, which is scheduled to take place in May, at the end of May.
So yeah, there's massive, right around the corner.
Massive international movement on this now. There's going to be a rally in Geneva that time. We're working with our country partners to have a World Freedom Week. So that whole week from the 24th of May till the 1st of June, it's actually a little bit longer than a week. There will be a lot of events around the world to highlight the importance of freedom. And how there's this real attack on mm-hmm. our sovereignty, both individual and national sovereignty.
So,
the way the whole thing, this coup is to take place is through health. They're using health, what they call health security, mm-hmm. as the reason. So they need us to be afraid of disease, and so they want us to ask for the surveillance. The surveillance and the disease go hand in hand. Now, we at World Council for Health see things completely differently, and we see nature being something to be nurtured and harnessed, nurtured, protected, and worked with. And we're part of nature, mm-hmm. and also sovereignty and freedom is absolutely integral to our well-being as human beings. We need choice. We need to be able to act in our conscience and not do what others tell us to do. So this is what we are really standing for. We are offering a decentralized alternative to the World Health Organization, which is a concentration of power. And we're standing for everybody taking responsibility for their health, taking mm-hmm. control of their health and their health making decisions, deciding mm-hmm. if they want to go natural or if they want to use pharmaceutical products. It's up to the individual person to make those choices.
Great. Fantastic. So there's a couple of things that you touched on here. The biggest thing that I could take that football right now and run with it. Is decentralization. And the other thing that I can unpack in there is the idea of taking responsibility for your health. And, you know, there's a couple of ways that I can look at that whereby, you know, we see a little bit of a push for that in the US here. I see it in advertisements every once in a while, or people saying, hey, you know, preemptive sort of things and, you know, take care of things before they happen, do the right thing so that you don't get sick. And of course, everybody wants to do that. Why not? Yeah. You know, we all want to be healthy, but don't say that because it's too expensive to get sick and because the system is so broken. So don't use that to offset that reasoning, you know? And I think that that's a big part of the problem in here in America. Anyway, the system is completely broken, but you are absolutely right. And I mean, decentralization is the way to empower people. And I think that, you know, for example, I think that the U.S. is probably, like I like to call it, the last chance Texaco, last chance saloon, specifically because of the constitution that we have that was written, right? And the way that the country is set up as a constitutional republic, functioning kind of as a democracy, but without the threat of mob rule, but it's we the people, a government for the people and by the people. And the idea that we have, yes, we have a federal, overarching federal government, but at the same time, we have individual sovereignty of states. So that power has reared its head recently, and I don't want to get tangential here.
Vinny, there's a couple of things I want to pick up before I forget and what you've said. Sure. So the one thing is the misconception that taking responsibility for health means going and having a whole lot of blood tests at your doctor's and then getting some pills for hypertension, all the stuff that suddenly is detected and identified and going on that for the rest of your life. We need to treat our bodies a bit like our cars and our pets. We go for checkups, regular checkups, you know. So, and a checkup doesn't mean going to a doctor. It means going to, you know, spending time with other sorts of healers, the natural healers, people who do touch therapy and body work and those sorts of things that actually tune us up. You know, we need to take time in nature and tune out, make sure we get our feet in the ocean and then on the grass. These are the sorts of things. When I talk about taking responsibility for health, what I'm really saying is getting off the computers, getting off the digital things that are so bad that actually affect our physical and our mental health. And away from the televisions, the programming. That's why TV is called TV programming. It's programming people, programming us with what they want us to buy and how they want us to behave. So, and it's taking kind of moral, you know, doing moral work as well, self-development work, because one of the things that I think is notable, and you feel that you're saying that you feel the U.S. is the last chance Texaco, but I think things have changed. And I think what's happened is, you know, money is what has, as I've alluded to earlier, it's become a god. And there's no place where money is a greater god than in the U.S., I would think. From the outside, it seems, because everybody wants to be a millionaire. Millionaires are worshipped. Billionaires are worshipped. It's aspirational. Now, a billionaire is like a hoarder. If a billionaire was actually a book hoarder, you would say, this guy's got too many books. There's something wrong with him, you know. So you would go into his house. It would just be packed up with stuff. But because it's money, it's people. But people have been groomed in that way. Every, you know, the heist, all those films, the outcome's always money. Any success is measured in money. There isn't some well-balanced guy sitting on the beach, you know, absolutely healthy and fit as a fiddle. And someone says, "Well, this guy's really successful. I want to be like him." Yeah. No, people. Their aspiration is all around money. So we have to change that, because that is what's caused the collapse of a civilization. We're actually witnessing the collapse of a civilization.
You're absolutely right, Tessa. But here's the thing. I mean, I wonder if that's also by design. I mean, the fiat money system is going to collapse. And the next thing you know, here come the CBDCs. Yeah,
it's all by design. So, you know, we're at a wonderful point in humanity, because we've kind of seen the error of our ways, and we're all complicit. You know, we outsourced all our power to these guys. They just said, "Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Sign here. You know, check this box, and we'll, you know, we'll allow you to access your work on Microsoft or whatever it is. So we've handed over so much for convenience, and we've been trying to keep up with the Joneses or whatever it is and the latest tech, and we've allowed them, the globalists, to convince us to upgrade our cars to other sorts of things and destroy the others and continue exploitative mining practices to make new stuff. And we've just kind of not been looking at the big picture. And I think it's a time really for humanity to really look at ourselves and remember what we're really good at, and remember what really makes us happy. And I want to just, you know, one of the reasons why I was so excited to speak with you is because you're a musician. And, you know, music is just absolutely integral to our well-being. It's also how we are used. It's also how we are programmed, because there's a lot of really bad music that that is used to undermine our children's morals, our morals, everyone's morals. You know, I really believe that if you know that God, I know not everybody believes in God or whatever, but I believe that God speaks to us through music because we can understand it. And in actual fact, Tesla, you know, Nikola Tesla, he said, if you want to understand the universe, think in terms of frequency and vibration. Now, that is music.
Amen.
And so this is how we reach people.
Yeah.
We reach them our through heavenly music. Language.
Yeah. And you know, if people say, well, when they don't believe in God, it's like, well, you know, then you don't believe in anything greater. Let me rephrase that. I won't say if then. What I could say is that well, then do you believe in anything greater than yourself? Any transcendent isness, you know? But you know, anyway, that's a whole other thing. Yeah. But you're absolutely right. It's our heavenly language. Everything is frequencies. And we as musicians, I feel, and I've said this many times, have a responsibility to carry that message well. You know, again, music, it reaches parts of the brain that are so deep. Like I'll repeat myself here, but it's important. Even people who have Alzheimer's, they don't know their own names. They don't recognize your face or your name, but if you hum their favorite tune, they'll sing along. So all of a sudden you have these frequencies where you're combining language with notes and rhythm, and somehow, so therefore, if you're going to be an artist and you're going to use that gift to, you know, transmit messages that are really, really dark, it's a gross misuse of that gift, and it's going to affect society detrimentally, you know. And we need to do better than that. So a part of civilization and preventing its demise is having that ethic, being able to have that ethic in using it with that mode of transmission. Amen?
Well, you only need to look at which musicians have been assassinated in the last few decades. I'm thinking John Lennon, Bob Marley.
Okay.
You know, the power of music is, it's phenomenal, and it is such a threat to the controllers, let's call them.
That's why the media controls it and puts those kind of
music. Yeah, it has a way of reaching people in their hearts. And human beings are heart-based. What the controllers or the corporation actually means a dead entity. And they're trying to push us into this inorganic world. You can see people with their headphones on and all that. All of that serves to isolate people from... Exactly. From you know, these the natural sounds and rhythms of humans and in nature.
Absolutely. And musicians, you know, we were affected greatly during the pandemic. It was probably the final nail in our coffin in a lot of ways, because the industry has been destroyed. You know, and not only that, so, you know, we had to stay home, but also it's interesting to note that and you and I have talked about this, you know, before, about how musicians, it's so changed since the 60s, where, you know, the protesting, you know, has suddenly, now they're like they're touting the narrative. Like, how did that happen?
Well, you know what? Because along with worshiping money, we've been worshiping science. Now, funny, I always think of Terence McKenna and science. I don't know if you know Terence McKenna, but he was an American philosopher, and he said science is the plumbing level of this reality. And that really does seem to play out. You know, science, and he's not the only one who says it. There's ancient texts that indicate mm-hmm. that synchronicity is far more, which is an organic intelligence, explains far more of our reality than science. You know, science has to be very controlled. You have to have everything like that just so, and, you know, you can't have the wind blowing, otherwise that's going to change the setup. So science does not actually explain our reality. It probably explains 0.1%, you know, and that is the lens through which we're trying to make our world fit. And it certainly doesn't. We can no longer evaluate our world through the lens of this controlled science. There must be something more. GOD actually could be grand organic design. You know, there's a grand organic design that we haven't been allowed to entertain just yet. And it's time we look at that, because the science model doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, and this is not to demean science per se, but I understand what you're saying. That's a great acronym, by the way. And I think the mystics got it right. Yeah.
I think it's not that science is a problem. It's that what is called science is a problem. Mm. We need to expand the scope of science to include things that have previously been called mysticism or whatever, you know. So we need to start looking more deeply at everything that's been dismissed, because the one thing that's clear is what we are told we should look at are the things we shouldn't be looking at. And the things we've been told not to look at are the things we should be looking at. Mm-hmm. So we need to shift our frame of reference from doing what we're told and doing those things that we're told not to do, so that we can actually evaluate them properly, because those are the things that tend to be natural remedies. For example, I'm just thinking now of medicines and all those. We're told, don't use this, don't use that. There are no controlled trials. Well, there's no controlled trials for iodine. Well, there probably is a controlled trial for iodine, but for, you know, for herbal plants and things, because mm-hmm. you don't need to, because there's thousands of years of ancient wisdom that show that certain herbs are useful, and plus they're not harmful. So, you know, the reason why we have these expensive trials is because the drug companies introduce these molecules that then need to be retrofitted to a disease. And a trial, you know, costs billions or millions anyway, and it's really testing safety more than anything else. So it's just a whole. We need to really look at things differently and expand what we call science, mm-hmm. And not limit science to the few things we do think we understand.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying. I mean, you know, I spoke about this before, but it's one of those things where, you know, well, we were following the science, and science is malleable. It tries to repeat experiments to achieve the same results, but it's like, you know, if you're following the science, then why, and you are supposed to be the science, and you know what I'm talking about here, why would you say something like, if you get the jab, you won't get this? You would think that one would not make such a conclusive statement if it's evolving.
I think one of the things that's very dangerous about this WHO document, and I just wanted to tell your listeners that actually mm-hmm. I worked as an external consultant to the World Health Organization since 2012, evaluating bodies of evidence, synthesizing them, and then helping panels reach a recommendation and then drawing up those documents. So I'm well aware of how the science works. But I think what I was wanting to say is that in this document, the WHO is wanting to take control of the science. So they're saying, we are the science. You heard Dr. Fauci saying, He is the science. And this is the exactly. Energy. They're wanting to own the science. And then they are the ones that say, this is science and this is the science we follow. And that converts science into a religion, you know.
Exactly.
And they become the priests then of the science religion. Mm-hmm. So we really need to say no, you know, we absolutely will not. We need open information. And the science in that way is so easily corrupted because, and we've already seen with COVID how the science was so easily corrupted because the Pfizer trials were fraudulent and there was never any grounds to say that the COVID-19 genetic therapies that they called vaccines were safe. You just simply can't. I mean, in my experience as a researcher, you simply cannot call a new drug safe when it takes at least 10 to 15 years to prove safety in the case of a genetic therapy. At least 10 to 15 years.
Okay,
so
well,
they could have said, look, we think it's effective. We're not sure how safe it is, but we think it's the best thing we can put forward at this time. That would have been a more honest approach.
Right.
And we'll monitor the data and we'll see what happens. And we'll let you know if we think the side effects are too bad or too many people get sick. That would have been an honest approach. But they just said from the get-go, these vaccines are safe and effective. Mm-hmm. And I think that put a lot of people, alarm bells ringing. Because everybody was thinking, well, how can they know this? COVID's only just been declared. They've only just developed these amazing so-called vaccines. And how can they possibly know that they're safe? So
yeah, I understand. You know, I mean, some people have said to me, well, they've been working on this for a long time, meaning the mRNA technology. Okay, but that doesn't contradict what you just said. For example,
and there was never, see, this was the first thing I did in 2020 when they announced these vaccines, this new technology. I looked at the existing literature and there was not the foundational studies to show that this technology would be safe and effective because it had never been used before. It had never actually passed enough of the studies. You have a phase one study, a phase two study, a phase three study, and phase four. It had never gone through those steps successfully for any use before. So why would it suddenly be successful? Any drug, a new drug, if you start, you say, I'm going to develop a drug for chickenpox or something, and you start, it's going to take the chance of your drug getting to market in 10 years' time after it's been through all the studies is about 7%. So we had a whole lot of drugs launched at the same time, all these different vaccines launched at the same time, and they're all somehow safe and effective. Surely, you know, that can't be true.
Right, exactly.
Each one of them would have had a 7% chance of, you know, at most, of actually making it to the finish line.
Right, and not to mention the fact that the gain of function has been going on for a while and all this other sort of, I don't know, genome editing, if that's the right sort of nomenclature to use for the kinds of things that were going on, you know, splicing things in and out of these things. So just to play devil's advocate here. No, the other thing is, I want to go back to just what the reason why I mentioned decentralization is because, you know, what I think is really, really important is how we can stand up as the people in order to really, really make a difference. Because when I was talking about before this, you know, having the structure that we have in the United States where there is actual individual state sovereignty, I'm actually wondering if the states themselves could stand up against this and say, listen, you know, if the federal government signs on to this and we can't stop you from doing it, then we in this state are going to stand against it and say, sorry, we don't agree. You can't touch us. Now, whether or not the individual states are able to do that, I don't know.
They are. But, and I think what you're going to see in the U.S. is a decentralization. Mm-hmm. You know, you're such a big country, so many people. Is it really sensible to continue with the kind of two-party system for the entire country? But that's just my personal view. Mm-hmm. But what we are doing, and you see, what's clear is that our governments are captured. So there might be the odd states or the odd communities or whatever that that do take a stand, because one does think surely they can't control every state and every country. But what we are doing, as well as standing up, so, you know, doing coordinated actions and solidarity, mm-hmm. we produce legal briefs and that sort of stuff, but we are forming country councils around the world and state councils. We are in the process of negotiating with groups in Florida to form a World Council for Health Florida. Hopefully we'll have World Council for Health Utah and so on. And it's about creating alternative systems. New systems are what's needed. So we have to have, as well as resisting the old, resisting this new world order, the old systems are, they're fundamentally flawed and broken. They've been sort of corrupted from the inside. So we need to think about ways to make sure this never happens again, ways that protect mm-hmm. Human life and all the life of all creatures and the planet. We mm-hmm. can't have this, these corporations coming in again, or individuals coming in and saying, I'm going to do this and that and to hell with you all, you know. So we have to make sure that that this never happens again. So we're creating what we call a better way for a better world. We have a set of principles called the Better Way Charter, and it goes like this. The first one is, we act in honor and do no harm. We have free will, so we're responsible for our choices. We're mm-hmm. part of nature, so we need nature to be well so that we can be well. Mm-hmm. Spirituality is integral to our well-being. So whether you're, you know, part of a form of religion, or whether love to be in nature or whatever mm-hmm. it is, however, you know, we all need to have a life of meaning and a life of purpose. And a wholesome life, you know. We value our, we don't survive well on our own. We actually value our communities. We need one another. So mm-hmm. this is very important. We don't want to live in a box that the Great Reset has planned for us. Mm-hmm. We value different perspectives. So this is how we've got along for, you know, we live in a clan, how we've got along our ancestors for thousands of years. We get together, we talk about things, we don't always agree. This is how we kind of refine our knowledge and wisdom. We need that. That's part of our Better Way Charter. And then lastly, we use technology with discernment. So technology mm-hmm. is useful. There are nature is has technologies, but the word technology has been captured and is now used as artificial technology. But artificial technology is fake technology. Nature has many technologies that we haven't even tapped into because we haven't quite understood nature properly. Right. So those are the seven principles. But underpinning the whole thing is that we do not tolerate the violation of inalienable rights and freedoms, and we do not tolerate profit, power, and influence coming before the well-being of people and the planet. Mm-hmm. So this is just—it's just a little. I don't know if I've got a sheet here somewhere, but it's on the website. That just sort of outlines that. It's on our website, worldcouncilforhealth.org, mm-hmm.
And you have the Great Free Set, exactly right. So
yes, so the Great Free Set is our counter to the Great Reset, because the Great Reset is a very dystopian world where which is being promulgated by the World Economic Forum. Mm-hmm. And the plan is to create cyborgs to replace human beings. So it's mm-hmm. basically to have everybody chipped and augmented in some way and controlled and so on. Mm-hmm. So the great, and obviously with, you know, digital currencies mm-hmm. And all of that. So the Great Free Set, this is a website where you can go and just understand the issues a little bit more about what's happening to our food, what's happening to the environment, to the pollution, what's happening with CBDCs. And also you can access these documents which explain what's going on with the World Health Organization Where the other one is, but anyway, and also the effects of unregulated digitalization on health and democracy. We also have a policy brief on child trafficking and humans and slavery, so modern day slavery. So I really recommend that.
Yeah, I had the great free set on the screen, and I lost it. I pressed the wrong button, but I'm going to show it here so people can see it. You could just go to thegreatfreeset.org, and you have a lot of there's the World Council for Health, Children's Health Defense, and there are a lot of resources here that you have as well.
Yeah, Vinny, the aim of that website is really to give people little challenges, because it can seem overwhelming, like, oh my goodness, what can we do? They're so powerful, and we are we are also powerful, especially when we work together. But there's little things each and every one of us can do. And that has, at the moment, I think it's got 9 challenges, and we'll be adding challenges, but they're really easy. They have nice little cartoons to get you going, and it's how to detach from the how to get out of the digital dungeon, you know, shop locally, information about fiat currency and such.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, rather than sort of, you know, I was going to sort of have a little banter back and forth with you, with, you know, me playing devil's advocate, like, so, you know, what's wrong with a central agency, you know, being able to dictate the movements in unison of the entire globe in the event of a health emergency, because we know what happened the last time when it was left to individual countries. Everybody scrambled. Nobody knew what to do. Sweden did its own thing. You know what I mean? And so you very well said that this is a way to sell it, but there are those who will resist, saying, well, they know better than us. They're the experts, you know? And yeah, it's formidable, but I think that you've presented enough evidence to show the contrary, that, you know, no, we're being hoodwinked.
Some people like to be told what to do, and there's no, yeah, I think the most important thing as human beings is that we should have choice. You know, we should be able to, we should have choice. In order to have choice, you need to have good information and trustworthy information, which is what we aim to do with World Council for Health, is bring trustworthy information from all our partners around the world. Mm-hmm. We have more than 230 organizations partnered with us in 55 countries. Mm-hmm. And the aim is to bring that information forward so that people have choice that's free from conflicts of interest, because what's happened is, where money's involved, information is not trustworthy. Or not necessarily trustworthy, shall we say, and it's easily conflicted. So we need to make sure that that people have the information they need so that they can make informed choices and give informed consent for things that affect their health and well-being.
Mm-hmm. Well, we definitely need a charter in California, so, you know, I'll volunteer. But really, you know, for me, if I were to say one thing, I would just say, listen, people, can we just take 5 minutes from scrolling and do X in order to stand up against this? What would be the most effective thing to do? Myself, during the pandemic, you know, I was calling the California State Legislature at least once a week and emailing them and telling my friends to do the same, because some of the measures and the bills that were on the table were so draconian and so horrific that anybody that would uphold them, it was beyond my scope of understanding. So, you know, if there was one thing, I don't know what I could say other than call your representatives and say, don't sign on to this, oppose this. Some people are wanting to exit the WHO, and that, you know, as much as that might not be a bad idea, it's, I don't know how likely that is to happen. But at the very least, we could probably, you know, on an individual community and municipal and state level, you know, call a representative and say, listen, you know, this is not a good idea. Does that sound like about right?
Yes, that's one way of doing it. I think, you know, this, the way that I spend my time, 20% in resistance and 80% in creation. Okay. So it's really important for individuals to feel well. If we have healthy individuals, we have a healthy, resilient society. and community and world. So the foundation stone is healthy individuals. So if you've only got 5 minutes, get to the beach and have a swim. Go into nature, you know. Right, that's what right. You must do. If you're going to take 5 minutes from scrolling, don't go and phone your representative. That's highly stressful. Rather just go and have a swim in the surf or go go and sit against a tree, hug a tree or something. Yeah. That will be much better for the world. We need you to be well, okay?
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I really can't. But
if there are musicians out there, yeah. Then just go and tap into – we are creators. We are chips of the creator, you know, so we are creative. Tap into the music, not the depressing music that's all about cyborgs and stuff and dystopia. Tap into the creative, the beauty, the wonder, the complex art that is music, that is your God-given talent, and produce something that will move people's hearts.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and it would preserve all of our own sanity. I think, yeah, amen to that. But
okay. So then, what you can do is you can download these documents from our website, or you can actually we also sell them. We've got a shop. We sell them on the website. I think it's. I don't know, $10 or something for the document. It's not a lot, but you can download for free, deliver them to your representatives. If you want to help them understand the issues, download the documents. There's one on the WHO. There's one on the effects of unregulated digitalization, and there's a legal brief. So if you go to the World Council of Health about us, you'll find policy briefs and legal briefs. There's a legal brief that will inform your representatives about the legal aspects. It's been put together by a human rights law expert, and it explains how the COVID pandemic never actually fit the legal criteria for a state of emergency, and because they say more of these are coming, it's good to know what the criteria are to declare these states of emergency. Mm-hmm. So download those documents. Mm-hmm. They're all available on the website for free. You can also support us by purchasing one off the website shop if you want a nice copy, and use those to raise awareness because they are very readable. They are really put together by experts who've analyzed the situation, and they are for communication with politicians and leaders and so on. So that is the one thing. And then for your friends and so on, if they are, if they have been vaccinated, or for yourself, or if you want, we all need to detox. We talked about taking responsibility for health, so we can all detox this terrible pollution in our environment that really affects everybody's health. So whether or not one has had COVID or had one of these genetic therapies, or whether one lives with other people who have been sick or are sick, and we have a leaflet, we have leaflets, we have a detox guide that can give you some natural alternatives to detoxing, cleansing, reducing your risk of spike protein, and improving your immune system. So, that's a really simple way of helping people around you who are not experiencing good health.
That's fantastic. That's really, really good to know. Those resources are golden. And I will post the resources as well and links when this is out. So in closing, Dr. Lowry, I think you basically just articulated a great coda here, in terms of actionable things and really just a better outlook that we need to recapture as people. So
yeah, it's really about remembering who we are as human beings and getting in touch with that. We're courageous and spirited. We're not downtrodden and glued to computers and that sort of thing. Maybe you and I are a bit too much, but it's really about remembering the joy of living and not worrying so much. One of One of our little stickers says, be a warrior, not a warrior. You know, the difference.
Yes, absolutely.
We cannot comply our way out of the situation. So there's no point just worrying and saying, okay, I'll acquiesce, because bullies never stop, do they? That once they've got you acquiescing and complying, they just keep pushing the boundaries. We cannot react our way. We can't just get angry and say, oh, damn, I fell for that, and now are there things you can do? But anger is not going to help that much. Anger is useful if it's transmuted into energy and action, you know. But just sending angry messages around on Telegram or whatever, or WhatsApp, is not useful, and scaring everybody with the next scary thing is not useful. We have to create our way out of tyranny. This is how we create a new way. We say, look, you can sign these stupid documents if you insist, but we're not going to abide by them. We're going to create a different way. We're going to create a system where we respect and love one each other, that's based on ethics and community and a better way. So where we act in honor and do no harm. So that's what we're doing, and we hope you will join us.
Amen. Amen. That's beautiful. Beautifully said. Dr. Lowry, thank you so much for all of your wisdom, information, and insight, and your courage and your spirit, and for giving us this time. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Benny. I hope you will be able to play at some point that the video, the warrior anthem, for your guests. I've put the link in the chat, and I know music is everyone's got their own taste in music, but this is a song that's designed to empower.
I'll make sure I have that link up. Absolutely.
Thanks very much. I saw a film, a short film, come out today, put together by David Sorensen. It's called The End of Humanity, which sounds it has a happy ending. So it's 40 minutes long, and I'll share the link with you as well, because it's a very well put together and very thought provoking and very digestible piece of art.
Excellent. Great. Well, I'll make sure that's out there as well. Thank you so much, Dr. Lowry.
Thanks, Vinny.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for the next episode of Breakfast with Vinny.